Here's Higdon, it sits up nicely for Michael Higdon! And what a start for Motherwell! But here's Malt, and he goes for it for Sutton! Magnificent Malt! Stephen Robinson celebrates! Motherwell, 2-1! Could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr and Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. A couple of weeks later than planned, I'm joined by Pepe and Andy to go over the year 2020 from a Motherwell perspective. Guys, I would say Happy New Year, but we're nearly at the end of January, so I'll avoid that. But thank you very much for joining us tonight.
No probs.
Well, we'll just start in January of 2020 and make our way forward. We'll focus on a few key points and moments from the year, which I think we'll possibly conclude was a pretty disappointing one on the park. But there was plenty of things that happened, and the year started with a really convincing victory at Dens Park over Dundee in the Scottish Cup. Chris Long bagging his first professional hat-trick. And then we would go on to Pittodrie in the next game, Andy. A 1-0 victory there. Liam Donnelly scoring just on the stroke of half-time from Liam Polworth's free kick. The significance of that was pretty massive. It took us a few points clear in third place. And perhaps after a festive period where we looked to be struggling towards the back end of 2019, that put us back in third place and looking towards securing a place in Europe.
Yeah, well, I think that's the kind of thing. It's like everybody's kind of written 2020 off, and understandably so in many respects. But it wasn't actually the worst start to it. Contrary to our kind of usual December form, we actually had a really good kind of 5 or 6 weeks before the turn of the year. Even I would say that Hamilton game that we lost. I thought that the first half of that game we could easily have been 3-4-0 up, and that would have potentially sent you into the new year with, like, I think 5 successive wins or something like that. But 5-6 or something like that anyway, getting into it. It was pretty good form. So it was good to see us, like, I don't know if you're including the kind of Scottish Cup, but it was a fairly routine kind of win there. That was good. Get things kicking off again. Scored a few goals, and the win against Aberdeen was obviously excellent. Really good time to get that result in, and it kind of set a marker for the challenge for sort of third spot. Even after that, the head result was kind of a wee bit unfortunate. It was one of those ones we could have won, we maybe could have lost it. You know, not too upset, but a point. So certainly, January certainly wasn't the worst start to the year we've ever had. And I don't really think too many people sort of foresaw what was kind of coming going into February and beyond.
Pepe, Andy mentioned the 0-0 draw against Hibs, and I think that was a game that we certainly deserved to win. Possibly the most I've seen a Hibs side defend at Fir Park, and then after the game they were very much celebrating the fact that they'd earned a point at Fir Park, and maybe that was on the back of the 3-0 turning over they had had in the previous trip to Fir Park. And I'm pretty sure at that point as well they were quite a significant amount of time without a victory at our place. We then finished the month with James Scott leaving on deadline day. It was our third highest transfer fee received behind the deals for Phil O'Donnell and James McFadden. Rolando Ahrens came in loan from Newcastle, and Michael Ndoye had already signed on loan from Bournemouth. The departure of Scott was one that kind of split fans somewhat. He was certainly finding his feet in the first team, and it was his first full season where he was playing week in, week out. That said, that the money on the table was obviously very significant and possibly too good for the club to turn down on the back of having failed to secure a move for David Turnbull in the summer when there was big money on the table and it looked like we almost had that money spent without having received it yet. So to have that kind of pulled away at the 23rd hour, was it a case of not having to definitely accept it, but really having our heads turned to the point that it was maybe just too good to refuse at that point in time?
I think it was the right choice. I don't think there was any way that, I think the money that we got for him was way over what he was worth for what he had done. The comparison that I would give to that is the value of what Alan Campbell's getting quoted for. Alan Campbell's arguably been our most important player over the last couple of seasons, and yet they're talking about $500,000 tops. Whereas for me, if James Scott goes for $1.5 million, then Alan Campbell's worth that and more, in my opinion. I'm glad that you mentioned the guy that we signed for Bournemouth, because I completely forgot that he'd even signed. But the other signing I thought was quite exciting was Rolando Arms, came from absolutely for nowhere. I kind of briefly remembered him when he signed, and quickly done a wee bit of research and seen that he'd scored for Newcastle in the Premier League. So it was quite an exciting signing, and it was quite. I was one thing about the season being cut short. I thought he was just starting to really get fit, get match fit, and really find his way. He was a really, I really quite liked him. So going forward, I thought at that point that we were building a good squad. The financial sense for James Scott was, as usual with Miller, was definitely the right thing to do. And to be honest, I don't think there was too much kind of a... He'd done well for us, don't get me wrong. He wasn't overly consistent. The finished article, I was actually quite surprised that he went as quick. But on this occasion, I think it was more of a club decision than a player decision, because the money was just too good to be turned down. Obviously, it was influenced because they were desperate to sign a kind of left-sided attacking player, because they'd lost the guy Bone that went to West Ham. So that's probably worked in our favour. And obviously, probably at that time, didn't realise how crucial that money was going to be for what was ahead of us.
Andy, I was kind of scrambling about prior to recording this to see what the current situation is with James Scott. In terms of, I can see that he's been out of the squad for the last three or four Hull City games. As we speak, they're currently 2-0 down to Accrington Stanley, but they are top of English League One. He scored a couple of times and he's looked pretty good in the appearances that I've seen on Sky. But it looks like he may have fallen out of favour just now. He's got plenty of time to develop and plenty of time to learn his trade. But would you go with Pepe's assessment that it was the right time to cash in?
I think for both player and club, it seemed sensible at the time. He's obviously going to significantly improve his salary. And I think you can always come back to, well, before I get to that, we'll say there's always going to be the fact that we advertise ourselves as a club that's going to provide kind of talent with a kind of platform to go elsewhere, to go and further their careers elsewhere. So I think there's only so much digging your heels in the club can do whenever there's a sort of a significant offer or an offer that meets the valuation for any of the kind of youngsters that get to develop to a certain standard. So I think there's a sense of inevitability coming about it, and if all parties are happy with that, then it seems sensible. It left in terms of our kind of season, it definitely left us short up front. He provided not only a kind of goal scoring threat, but that ability to kind of hold on to the ball and kind of bring other people into the game as well was certainly developing. And he'd come on great guns in the kind of 18 months or so that he'd kind of been in and around the kind of first team squad. Scored some great goals last season, so he was definitely a loss whenever he went. As to how he goes in the longer term, I mean, he did pick up an injury, a fairly serious injury, not so long after joining them. How much that's inhibited him, I don't know. on the face of it, you would anticipate that with him dropping down a tier from Weary, the level that when he joined Hull, that he might benefit from that. But he's still ultimately quite a young player, and as you say, there's plenty of time for development and kind of getting back up to the kind of confidence levels and the kind of play, the free kind of style of play that he was enjoying when he was at Fir Park. And I'm sure it'll all work in his development, but as has happened in numerous cases before, if it doesn't, then he'll come back up the road with his bank balance significantly improved, but with a reputation for his time at Motherwell in Scotland, under-21s at least, that he should be able to pick himself up a club and a movie, a decent standard anyway. So time will tell on that one.
February began with an awful 1-0 defeat at Livingston, losing to Livingston, not great in itself, but the performance that day was pretty abysmal, right up there with the worst that we were going to see for the rest of the year, I reckon. Then when Celtic came to Fir Park, they cruised to a 4-0 victory. It was almost the usual story there. We started fairly well, and then when we went behind, we never really looked like threatening to get back into the game. And Celtic, following their defeat in the New Year derby, they completely came back all guns blazing and really swept aside everything in front of them from that point forward. Tony Watt arrived just before we were due to play Sittman in the Scottish Cup. And Andy, I'll stick with you to go over that one. It was, again, another transfer that raised a few eyebrows. Tony Watt's journeyman status within football has been well documented. There was a few question marks over his attitude and whether he would be able to knuckle down and would get to see the best out of him. And I think it's fair to say that he's proven a lot of these retractors wrong with his performances since arriving. He's obviously went on to sign a more longer term deal with the football club, contributed with a few goals, but I think what he's more renowned for is his committed performances, his energy levels, and I think also that bit of experience from having been well travelled and played at the highest level at points in his career.
Yeah, it was a signing that I wasn't unhappy about whenever he came in. He'd certainly done the rounds, and of course there's always going to be that baggage of what he did at Celtic that comes with it, which is can be a bit tiresome if you've no real interest in them, of course. But certainly we kind of alluded to it in the earlier podcast, but managers will always be managers that think that they have the kind of secret to unlock the best that a player, and you know, it's evidenced time and time again that there are connections spring up, and that seemed to be the case with Watt under Robinson. He certainly wasn't, you know, prolific by any manner of means to kind of commence with, but you know, that was what kind of stuck in my mind was he's not so long after he signed, he'd pretty much done the kind of all of the kind of Scottish Cup tie, I think. The kind of full 90 minutes in extra time of the St Mirren game, and then like 3 days later or 4 days later with about 70-75 minutes worth in the derby at Aki. So I think any kind of thoughts that he didn't have a level of fitness, that was certainly disproved in those two games. And over the course of the calendar year, he certainly proved himself a good signing.
We could have done with the benefit of hindsight, because these games are coming thick and fast. The St Mirren game in the fifth round of the Scottish Cup ended 1-1, a game that I think it's fair to say that we deserved to win. We looked in control, but lost a goal late on and had to settle for a replay. Then we went to St Johnstone in the league, Pepe. And it's kind of mirrors this season, where you get a bad result and it can put the heads down and you can let the heads drop. And suddenly, before you know it, you've lost 3 or 4 in the spin. And this is exactly what happened around this time last season. We're not managing to win the games that we look like we deserve to. They'll turn into a draw or a defeat. And the games we go behind in, we don't look like getting back into. So the St Johnstone game, we did go 1-0 behind and then get a rather fortuitous equaliser. The last kick of the ball was Chris Kane sliding the ball home. Before that, Christy Menzinga had been sent off. He came off the bench about 10 minutes before it, took a stupid dive in the box, which was his second booking. It was the most blatant dive you're likely to see, and it proved to be so costly. Pretty much summed up Mnzinga's time at Motherwell. He was an enigmatic character, to say the least. But at that point, it was just kind of difficult to see where the next victory was going to come from. We were in a real rut.
I mean, even the Aki's game, going back slightly to that, Chris Long being sent off in that game, if I remember rightly.
We'll go on to that, mate, because that was...
I'm getting mixed up with where we were at that point. But I mean, Mnzinga, it was just... I think everybody had their hopes on that overhead kick goal, didn't they? The Gretna friendly, and it never really came in. Obviously, he scored the goal against St Johnstone, probably about November, December time, in 2019, the same season. But he never ever showed anything after that. Probably look at that game as you say, it was a kind of turning point in form and confidence. And possibly, I think when a late goal goes in like that, it's almost like the game in Boxing Day with Dundee United, that it takes a wind out of your sails. Like getting a point at Perth, and you've been... It was a decent result, almost kind of stopping the rot and whatever way you want to look at it. But then with losing a game like that, it was just brutal. And it started a kind of... a wee bit of a downward spiral, I suppose. I mean, going back to the Livingston game, it was probably the worst fixtures. The worst game that I've been to in a long, long time. I can remember the only thing that I took for that game was I was really impressed with Ricky Lamy. So that shows you how wrong I got that.
we'll park that for a wee bit later on in the podcast. But in terms of Chrissy Mnzinga as well, my favourite memory of him is the fact that a lot of people thought that overhead kick in the friendly at Gretna was actually Elliot Freer. And when you put them side by side, they look identical, don't they?
That's it, aye. I thought you were actually going to see your favourite memory was that he was teaching you how to wash your hands.
we'll maybe touch on that one a wee bit later on as well. Yeah, that was possibly his most solid contribution after the goal against St Johnstone, certainly. The Scottish Cup replay against St Mirren, it was an absolutely mad evening, to be fair. The first half is as bad as it gets. Bevis McGabby basically single-handedly ended Peter Hartley's Motherwell career that night. 4-1 down at half-time. How do you get in a situation like that? Wasn't against a St Mirren side that were firing on all cylinders by any stretch of the imagination, but we just made it so easy for them. That being said, and because St Mirren weren't a side that were firing on all cylinders, we somehow managed to find our way back into the game, and helped by Tony Watt's first goal for the club, we would end up coming back to draw the game 4-4 and force extra time. Extra time brought a lot of cramp for players, but nothing much else. And then we tamely exited in penalties. A poorer set of penalties I think you'll struggle to find, and it was kind of summed up by Jermaine Hilton's one that flew over the bar and nearly over the David Cooper stand as well. At the end of the day, Andy, it's another cup run that came to nothing for us. And it would have been a home tie against Aberdeen in the quarterfinals. A side that we knew from previous meetings that we were capable of going up against and getting a result. So, again, it's one that we'll look back on with disappointment and maybe tinges of regret as well, I guess.
Missed opportunity. Even going back to the first game in Paisley, I think we were pretty comfortable at that for much of the game as well. Had the lead and you allowed them to take it back to a replay, and to find yourself 4-1 down, pull it back to 4-4, have all the momentum, and then ultimately go out. It just leaves a kind of bad taste. Unfortunately, just disappointing. It's one of those ones
even if you'd be taking the hiding that we were at half time, then you know, you just put it behind you as a kind of nightmare, but it kind of lingers on, that wee bit of regret in there. It's a complete missed opportunity. But you have to, just I suppose, you have to take the positive that, you know, it was one of those nights where they didn't just chuck it, they kept going, went for it with the kind of changes, got the goal, then just had all of the kind of momentum, drove on, and you could have had one of those kind of feelings. One of the great kind of comeback nights was in the cards, but it just kind of fell short in the end, and disappointing really to go out in that manner. I must admit, thereafter my kind of interest kind of went to some extent, but then understandably it's taken like another 6 months or something like that for the actual tournament to reach its conclusion. But you know, that sort of felt like a real missed opportunity, that one.
The derby that Pepe mentioned a wee bit earlier on, Chris Long got sent off in the early stages again to stupid bookings, and it was just frustrating that was an opportunity to bounce back and record our first win of the month, and really stupidity put us on the back foot. And from a player that had been performing quite well, I mentioned how he started the year with the hat-trick and the victory, then in the final league fixture of the month, we would lose at home to St Mirren. So the second week in succession that St Mirren would leave for part with the bragging rights. The only positive of that night was the return of David Turnbull, who came off the bench. But February will be looked back on as a month that we had 7 encounters and didn't manage to win one of them. But despite the damage in February, we still held a single point lead over Aberdeen, and we managed to stretch that to 3 points when we beat Ross County at Fir Park. Aberdeen were held to a 0-0 draw at Kilmarnock, and we took full advantage. And they had, I recall that night, going behind again, and you begin to fear the worst. But it was a performance, Alan Campbell, that really dragged us up that night, and in the end we were going to win the game quite emphatically.
That's right, and that's the kind of, it did feel like a bit of a turning point. And again, you kind of wonder what would happen thereafter, and I'm kind of potentially jumping the gun a wee bit, but there was that kind of feeling that, okay, we'd taken care of Ross County quite comprehensively by the end of the game, and we then subsequently went to Tynecastle, taking a decent point. Granted, their position, you could be arguably looking for full points there, but getting a point wasn't back. We'd kind of stemmed the tide a wee bit of that back run. Everybody was kind of looking forward to Aberdeen, so you just kind of wonder where it could have went. Would there been a pick up in form, as kind of Pepe's alluded to earlier? You were getting performances, people were kind of starting to sort of turn the corner a wee bit. Scored a couple of times by that point. Aaron's was getting up to speed. You did wonder what was there. Long had started scoring again, so you just kind of wonder. But that night, and I think for a lot of people, it will be, certainly the last home game that they'll have been present at. For many, the last time they'll have seen the team. So, it's one that kind of sticks in the mind a wee bit more than most.
Just prior to the events that were going to shape the majority of 2020, David Turnbull would sign an extension to his contract. He expressed the belief that he owed it to the club and the supporters for the way he'd been looked after and treated through his injury. And he had been given a wee bit of game time in that defeat against St Mirren, and then also the 1-1 draw at Tynecastle. Friday the 13th, unlucky for the majority of the world, really. The announcement came in the morning that our game in the evening against Aberdeen, which was going to be a really pivotal game in the battle for third spot. BT cameras were going to be focused on Fir Park. The game was postponed and the season was suspended until further notice, considering the ongoing developments from the coronavirus outbreak and the risk to public health. At that point, Pepe, I don't know how seriously we were all taking this. We didn't really know a great deal about the virus or the pandemic itself. It was just a period of uncertainty. Obviously, not long after that, there would be a stay-at-home message issued, and many of our lives were turned upside down. It's been a crazy 10 months since then. But at that moment in time, what was your initial reaction? And did you believe that there could be a possibility that that would be the last time you saw Motherwell play in the 2019-20 season?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I can actually remember it was Friday afternoon, kind of late morning, early afternoon, and I found out the game was off, and I was absolutely shocked. I thought, surely this is just a one off, and then as things go on and on and on. But if you'd said to me a week after that we would be almost a year down the line, you'll never have seen your team playing again, I think you would have. I would have laughed in your face. I don't think anybody could have envisaged what was going to happen. I think it was then that you had this period that came up, and we didn't have any football, and it's a part of your life that it's important. It's probably the best way. This can be a distraction. In reality, at times you can go there and vent your frustrations or whatever else, just go and lose what's happening in your own life. And to take that away from kind of passionate fans, certainly I've felt it. People say, yeah, it's only football, there's more important things going on. But when it's an important aspect of your life, it does make a difference. I'm off my work just now, just taking a couple of weeks holiday. I would love to be able to jump in the car tomorrow and go away up to Dingwall, but it obviously wasn't to be. But if you, as I come back to it, I probably just didn't. I was pretty ignorant to the fact that this was even a possibility, which I think a lot of people were. And it kind of, as I said prior to watching this, I watched the Ross County game, and it was weird watching the game, thinking, God, that was the last time there was fans in the stadium. And oh, it's just I don't know. It's just, there isn't really words to describe it.
Yeah, I suppose ignorance, I don't think is a really fair description, given that the severity and the consequences of the virus and what would become a major part of all our lives in the not too distant future just wasn't outlined at that initial point when the football was being cancelled. But like the rest of us, the players and the staff would await what would come next. And at the beginning of April, it was announced there'd be no further fixtures until the beginning of June. As the severity of the pandemic became increasingly clear, the club really stepped up, and there was so many things that they did to support the fans, the families of the supporters, and everyone else in the local community that was in need. The community trust, along with the Welsh Society, delivered food parcels. There was players and staff phoning elderly fans to check in and make sure they were all right. There was campaigns to address holiday hunger for local school children, virtual fundraisers to fill Fir Park, and then perhaps giving ourselves a pat on the back with the podcasts and successive days to support Sam H. There was so much going on, and I think at what was or what is traditionally the most busy and significant time in the footballing calendar, the fans occupied themselves by trying to do good and keep each other going at a time where there was clear impacts to people's mental health, and there was people visibly struggling. I think that's at times where Motherwell can shine and show that the community club that everyone that supports the football club and follows the football club holds so dear. It was revealed on the 18th of May, after the 12 Premiership clubs agreed that completing the league season would be unfeasible, that the league would be concluded at that point. As a result, Motherwell finished third and would subsequently go on to compete in the Europa League as a result of that. The month of May ended, though, in really tragic circumstances. Andy, Christian Mbulu at the age of 23 passed away. And while we've been talking about things paling football into insignificance, this was another wake-up call. Perhaps some of us were getting a wee bit down in the dumps and bemoaning our own luck as a result of the pandemic. And then news like that hits home. And it just stops you in your tracks. That's only 23, no age at all. And it didn't feel that long ago, because it wasn't that long ago that he was turning out for the Motherwell first team. So really sad news. And again, the club and players that had played alongside Christian did a good job of paying tribute to their former teammate at a time where things were restricted in terms of how far we could go to honour someone that had played for the club and had passed away so young.
That's right. He certainly was a popular player by all accounts. By taking the kind of leap to come up to Scotland and play with ourselves, and the hope of kind of securing a contract and improving himself. And obviously, it didn't really kind of work out quite as he would have hoped at Motherwell. He seemed to be, you know, meeting those aspirations when he'd returned back down south. So it was pretty tragic stuff. And as you say, it kind of rightly puts things in perspective, you know, for how everybody was kind of feeling. But another kind of tragic loss at a really tough time.
As we move towards the end of May and the start of June, the traditional end of season renewals and player cuts took place. Tony Watt signed up for another season with the club, and it was also announced that 10 players would be leaving Fir Park. Mark Gillespie, Peter Hartley, Richard Tate were included in these departures. And I think these would be the most significant from that list. Now, at the time, it looked like the likes of Chris Long would also be leaving, but he soon re-emerged in ML1. But let's talk about these three players, Pepe, and we'll start off with Mark Gillespie, a goalkeeper that had come in for Trevor Carson, who did fantastically well as Motherwell's number one, replaced by Gillespie. And the biggest tribute you could give to Mark was that it was a seamless transition. In fact, if anything, he was able to surpass Carson and made it impossible for Stephen Robinson to hand the gloves back to Trevor Carson, because Gillespie was performing so well at the time.
Yep. It's a strange one for me personally, because I always had it at the back of my mind when Carson came back that he would sail back in. I don't know why. I probably preferred Trevor Carson, but now looking back on that, I think my judgment on that was probably wrong. Didn't realise just how influential Mark Gillespie was. In saying that, I was really surprised that he got the move to Newcastle. At the end of the day, that's his boyhood club. Brilliant move for him financially, personally, but whatever else. The only kind of wee disappointing aspect to it is that he doesn't really seem to be in the plans of the manager at all. Steve Bruce down there, and he's never really been given a chance. He's played a couple of League Cup games, and then I think that Debrack is back for Newcastle now, so I think he's back down to kind of third choice, which is a shame for such a kind of a decent goalkeeper. Particularly when we've had to endure the skills of, or the lack of skills of Alan Chapman. But it was just one of the ones where we've had keepers like that. I think we said on Sunday in the podcast, when you look back at the goalkeepers that we've had, we've been really lucky that we've known more Alan Chapmans. We've had John Ruddy, Dan Randolph, Trevor Carson. We've had a few donkeys in there as well, but predominantly, when we've been on to a kind of settled goalkeeper, they've been really, really strong. And he stands up there with all the names that I've mentioned.
And in the case of Tate and Hartley, I mentioned the St Mirren game as a game that was almost the death knell for Peter Hartley's career at Fir Park. Richard Tate was another that, despite having accumulated a vast number of games for the club, he struggled in that last season to get a consistent run. There was obviously the offer of a contract that was on the table, and then I think it was withdrawn, given the circumstances and the ongoing situation with the pandemic. A wee bit of to and fro between Tate and the club towards the end, and a rather ill-advised interview from the player on Radio Scotland, which prompted a response from Motherwell. But I think the overriding one was one of disappointment to see two players that had served the club as well as Hartley and Tate had move on without getting the acclaim of the supporters, which they would have normally done had the season finished in normal circumstances.
Yep, Richard Tate, for me, we'll start with him. Quite a popular guy. I remember him coming into the Cooper Stand after both the semi-final and the Scottish Cup final. And he was the semi and the final. We went back to the stadium. He was a cracking guy. He was good with the kids. It was a really good fit with the club. And I was really, really disappointed when he left. But if you remember, during this pandemic, he kind of done the club endorsed his kind of fitness, doing his personal training on online and stuff like that. And I thought, he's really going to be part of the club. I agree that it looked as if he'd lost a bit of pace. Whether that was just he didn't have the match sharpness. And then the kind of twisted a wee bit when he left. It was almost as if he was sticking the fingers up at us. And I kind of lost a wee bit of respect for him at that point. I think I could understand the club's point of view that they had changed the terms of the contract. They hadn't signed in the first place, as far as I'm led to believe, that the deadline that was given, he was making out that the club had been backing in an offer, which was a kind of argument I think could have been done behind closed doors. So it left a kind of a bit of taste in my mouth, and it was quite disappointing for a player that I really, really liked. It's made it a wee bit worse that I think he could have done as a job this year. I really do. Out of the two of them, I think Hartley's time had been and gone. He was the scapegoat for a lot between the Motherwell support. But I totally agree with you. He was an excellent captain. Now, what I mean by that is he was a leader. I don't care what anybody says. Everybody's critical of the captain. The last captains that we've had, the fans, include myself in that, jump on it. If you look at Carol McHugh, he shouldn't be the captain. Peter Hartley, oh, he's the captain. He shouldn't be making a mistake. And it started to happen with Declan Gallagher. So you've got to pick a really strong character. And for me, Hartley, the way that he spoke, and he still continues to speak about the club in great terms, and it's a real shame that he won't get that send-off, which, in my opinion, he deserved. I would be really interested, going back to Richard Tate, to see what kind of reception he gets for the fans. I know there's a lot of fans who still have a soft spot for him. And I don't ever see myself as booing him, but I know that he's a fully committed player and stuff, and I don't expect him to shirk out of tackles. But he was annoying me when we played them a couple of weeks ago. I don't know what I expected from him. It's just different watching him playing for St. Matt. I don't know. He just seemed to frustrate me. Whether it was because I wanted him back in our team, because I felt he could have done a job, I don't know. But the whole thing with Richard Tate definitely could have been handled better. And I think the criticism has to light his door rather than at the club's.
As June began, the Motherwell fans showed a fantastic demonstration of loyalty by snapping up season tickets in record numbers, and that was despite not knowing when supporters would return to Scottish football stadiums, which is still the case 8 months on. A host of new faces arrived at the club as well, including Ricky Lamy, Jordan White, Nathan McGinley, Scott Fox and Mark O'Hara. They all signed for the club in June. And there was also some worry over the potential departure of Stephen Robinson to Northern Ireland. Tommy Wright and Ian Barraclough were all interviewed for the role. In the end, it was Ian Barraclough that was chosen to succeed Michael O'Neill. Guys, we'll maybe skip over the signings, just given that we have discussed them all at quite great length in the podcast over the last 3 or 4 months. And on the season tickets, it was a real show from the supporters. And this has happened across the board in Scottish football, where fans have dug deep and put their hands in their pockets, massively helping out the clubs at a time where they themselves may have been struggling, and also really in blind hope that there was going to be a point in this season where they would get into a football stadium and get to back the team in person. It doesn't look like it's going to transpire that way. And I don't know what happens next season. I think it's maybe too early to speculate on that. But at that point in time, it was a huge demonstration of support. And I think when we look back and these times and how people rallied around football clubs, things like Motherwell fans going out and buying season tickets in record numbers is definitely something that can be pinpointed as a real demonstration of loyalty and support to a football club. There's so many times where it can be accused that football fans are fickle and football fans are this and that, but there's no question in their loyalty.
No, that's absolutely right, and as you say, it's kind of evidenced right across the board, and lots of good initiatives, and be better using modern technology and a bit of generosity and goodwill in many people's parts that enables pretty much every team right across all of the kind of Scottish divisions to be able to watch their team and support from the living room, even if you can't be there in person. So, what the club did there was a good acknowledgement of the support that they were getting, and in turn the club or the supporters demonstrated their backing for the club with the numbers that signed up for the season tickets and took advantage of the kind of deal that was there.
The fixtures for the season were laid out at the beginning of July, and Stephen Robinson brought in Chris Long for a return spell. Callum Lang came in and loaned from Wigan Athletic, and also Jake Hastie, and what was a pretty controversial and debated move as he came back in a season long loan from Rangers. We played a series of closed door friendlies, beating Dundee United, drawing against Accies, and also suffering a heavy defeat against Rangers at Ibrox. And just towards the end of July, the club were saddened to hear the passing of one of the famous Ansell babes, Pat Quinn, at the age of 84. He made 251 appearances for the club between 1955 and 1962 and scored 119 goals. So again, Pepe, a lot happening despite the fact that the competitive football hadn't resumed. And again, a sad note to end the month on there.
Yeah, we're selling a lot kind of signings. I think we were all a wee bit dubious about what was going to happen. How was the season going to start? And I suppose there was a positive indication with the amount of signings. The most notable kind of discussion point being Jake Hastie. The majority of the signings, in my opinion, haven't really worked out, and that's why Steve Robinson's had to leave. And it just seems that things are hopefully on the up. On Jake Hastie, though, I think Andy said for the Aberdeen game, the player started him. I don't know what the situation is. I know we're talking about 2020. I don't know what the situation is with Lawless or Tony Watt. So I would quite like to see Hastie playing tomorrow. I think he's been kind of not vilified or picked on or anything like that. I just think that because he's never been the player that he's been before, that he's not had, he's the first to be criticised. And hopefully he'll turn the corner. But as we've said, the majority of these signings, the ones that you've mentioned before, haven't really worked out. And it's always, when it's an Ansell babe or whatever that goes, it is always sad. And it's not a bad goal record, is it?
No, we could certainly be doing with something like that just now, that's for sure. The Premiership season did begin on the 5th of August. We had to wait until the end of the weekend. We were the Monday night game, a trip to Ross County, and it ended in defeat. 1-0 defeat, courtesy of Ross Stewart's penalty. We also missed a penalty in that game. We would follow that up with a 1-0 home defeat to Dundee United. And it certainly wasn't an ideal way to start the season. Although I think we were a wee bit more open-minded and calm about the start, given the heights we'd seen the team reach in the previous season. And it was maybe just a case of things not quite clicking in the early stages.
It's certainly not uncommon for us to have a slow start in the league, so that wasn't overly concerning. Granted, the kind of start that we did have, you would have been looking for us to certainly pick up more points than we did. I still think we're a bit unfortunate in the first kind of three or four games. In truth, we could easily be Long's chance at Dingwall. You know, you think was it Lang had a free header as well, straight at the keeper, if I remember rightly. You know, obviously, the missed penalty. The Dundee United one just seemed like we'd kind of ran out of ideas, and there was a bit kind of smash and grab to some extent. So, unfortunate there. Could easily have been, you know, a couple of draws, if not a couple of a win-win and a draw there. Kind of had Livingston as well. We had opportunities there to kind of put that one away, and you know, we ended up we didn't see it through, and at least it was a first point of the campaign. And then the following week, I think we were starting to get a bit edgy at that point, and Hibs had a lot of kind of hype about their start to the season, and we actually went there and largely kind of played them off the park, had an unfortunate goal chopped off, and could well have been different. And I'm not kind of going too much into the month, but that sort of certainly started the, you know, kind of set the tone for much of the season. We are maybe not the worst performances in the world, certainly not the best, but not taking chances and putting things away and certainly paying the price for it.
Well, after going three games without a victory in the league, Stephen Robinson cut a pretty frustrated figure after that Livingston game, a 2-2 draw in that night. He would then delve into the transfer market and make a bit of a statement of intent in bringing in Scotland internationalist Stephen O'Donnell in a short-term deal. Andy mentioned the 0-0 at Easter Road. O'Donnell made his debut in that game. And then would make his Fir Park debut the following week as Hamilton Accies came to Fir Park. Again, though, and picking up the podcast with another bit of sadness, and unfortunately, over the course of this, it is kind of tinged with that. Another Fir Park great was, we had to mourn his passing, and Tam Forsyth passed away on the 14th of August of 2020. He was a boyhood Motherwell fan. He played 150 times for the club, and later returned to the football club as assistant boss to Tommy McLean. Andy, I know this is difficult because I keep on having to bring these things up, but I think it's prevalent when we look over the year that we do honour those that sadly left us in 2020 that served the football club so well.
No, absolutely. We kind of cherish our history and all those that have gone before and made the club what it was for us whenever we started taking an interest in it. So it's only right to acknowledge the achievements, particularly somebody as prominent in the history as Tam Forsyth, who was a guy that we'd kind of played with us, came back and was assistant manager for nigh on a decade, and you know, played his part in coaching numerous players going through and helping us to that first trophy and first major trophy in so many years, and played his part in helping us establish ourselves as a kind of a Premier League side. And you know, since him and Tommy McLean kind of brought us up to the top flight in the mid-80s, we've been there ever since. So there's a
there's a long lasting legacy through, you know, the kind of things that he set in motion. So absolutely, it's only right that we mark the contributions when, you know, the time comes that guys like Tam Forsyth are no longer with us.
For the second time in a row, Aki's visited Fir Park and left with all 3 points, Scott, and that then took us on to five games without a win, only 2 points from our first five games. And injuries were proving a problem as well. Scott Fox was one of those that was ruled out for the rest of the season after sustaining cruciate ligament damage. Then a kind of shining light on our side, David Turnbull, who had started the season really well and was drawn plaudits for his performances in claret and amber. He would depart for a club record-breaking fee of potentially up to £3.25 million. Another body blow, despite the almost astronomical fee involved there.
Again, I can't speak any higher of David Turnbull. You mentioned it briefly earlier about him signing the contract. It's just a pity that he's went to one of our rivals. But as a player, I mean, that season, he's probably the most exciting player. The only one I can really compare him with is Phil O'Donnell. And with the amount of goals that he scored from a midfield position was phenomenal. And everybody that he spoke about, everybody that you've, from people that's worked with him, say that he's going to go on and be an absolute star. And he just looks like that. I mean, the Celtic fans were obviously, there was a wee bit of debate whether he was going to go there. And when he was playing with us, oh, he's not good enough for us. And now they see the player that they have. I think it was I can't remember what pundit it was. It was maybe Chris Boyd having another pop at Celtic, but he said the only player that is guaranteed to be at Celtic next season is David Turnbull, which speaks volumes for the talent of the boy. But again, as you say, the current climate that we find ourselves in, financially, it made sense. And that is the makeup of the club. And it was a deal that suited everybody. It was a deal that obviously he wanted to go through. And I hope that he has a great career. I hope he gets a quick transfer away from them, ends up somewhere else, bigger and better. And I can start enjoying watching him playing again.
Well, we're spared the pain of watching David Turnbull tear us apart in the final game of August. But it did result in a 3-0 defeat at Celtic Park. Then it was straight into Europa League action. We hosted Glentoran in the first European fixture in over 7 years. In the end, a 5-1 victory, Andy. The first half certainly wasn't comfortable, and it possibly hinged on a sending off for Glentoran early in the second half. From there, we did assert our dominance, and coming away 5-1 victors, you're certainly never going to complain at that.
No, that's right. It certainly kind of turned the game our way. They had a couple of chances that had us concerned, and it was emphatic in the end. How much of that was to do with them running out of steam? Who knows whether we were just finally getting confident again, perhaps. But that was the kind of morale boosting scoreline we were really looking for and kind of really needed at that stage. I don't think anybody was surprised too much with the outcome at Parkhead after that. Certainly the European result was key that we got through, and then after Celtic it was okay, we've got them out of the way. Let's see if we can start building in things as we kind of moved into September.
Yeah, I got my timelines a wee bit mixed up there. Of course, the European game came before the trip to Celtic Park, and David Turnbull left on the day of the Glentoran game. The month of September started with more bad news on the injury front. Liam Donnelly ruled out until the new year after undergoing knee surgery. Then Alan Campbell's early goal was good enough to defeat St Johnstone at Fir Park, and then the team their first victory of the season. The hope that we would continue that momentum into the Europa League game against Coleraine looked pretty good. Callum Lang and Tony Watt had us 2-0 up at half-time. But then, a second half capitulation, really. Ben Doherty had driven Corrine back into the game, and then we would concede a penalty. Bevis McGabby sent off. 2-2 going into extra time. We managed to hold on during extra time, eventually winning the game in penalties and setting up a trip to Israel for a game against Beersheba and qualifying round three. It was quite a night, Pepe.
I am not going to start being critical of Bevis McGabby because I've turned this new positive leaf since the new year, but he did have a shocker that night, and it was just brutal. I think we all went there fully expecting another 5-6 goals and to be clinging on, especially when the game is virtually done at half time. Started really, alarm bells were ringing at this point for me, because I'm thinking, if you look back to the podcast, I would actually like to listen to that back, how positive we were, how before a ball had been kicked, saying that we were all happy with the signings and how well we were going to kick on. Fast forward a couple of months and you're like, oh my God, this is dreadful. We're meant to be enjoying being back in the European football. And to be honest, I didn't really enjoy any of the games. We won 5-1 against Glentoran, but it took us into the 58th minute to score the goal. In the Corrine game, we were hanging on. It was just dreadful. There's nothing else really else I can say. It's been quite a depressing review on my behalf at this point.
Robbie Crawford came in alone from Livingston as extra cover for the mountain injury problems that we were
having. Is that you trying to cheer me up with Robbie Crawford?
Well, I'll tell you what.
You failed.
There was a positive moment coming up here, and I would say it's the best performance of the year as well. We go to Pittodrie. We've just had that pretty awful 120 minutes, albeit with the lifter going on to winning penalties against Corrine. I don't think many of us would have fancied what came next at Pittodrie. Within 22 minutes, it was 3-0. Mark O'Hara opened from the spot. Chris Long got on in the act. And then Bevis McGabby, your man, pops up with a header. 3-0 after 23 minutes. And even after that, I thought we still demonstrated a threat. We never looked under any threat at the other end. A really accomplished performance. And certainly the best 3 points that we've had up until this point so far this season. But the Europa League adventure did end in the very next game. It was a 3-0 defeat to Hapoel Beersheba. Andy, Stephen Robinson rude after the game that it was a missed opportunity for the team. We were more than a match for them for the best part of the game, but Declan Gallagher's sending off with around about 20 minutes to go, it very much turned the game, didn't it?
Yeah, just in keeping with the season, it's another one that got away. We're certainly encouraging the bulk of the first half, doing pretty well, just sort of concede with such a poor goal, and we fast forward like 3 months and we're still conceding poor goals for set pieces, and that kind of put us up against it. As you say, it just seemed idiotic, the sending off at the time, having so quickly given away and the free kick to then commit a foul so soon after it, and that was it. It was just gone at that point, and they added a third for a bit of gloss, and I still don't know if I'm quite great at the time. I said it was equivalent to going to be maybe like a Hearts or a St Johnstone at the time in the Scottish Cup, and I'm maybe doing, you know, Beersheba a bit of disservice in that respect, but the gap wasn't as big as a 3-0 scoreline suggested on the evidence of that 90 minutes. I mean, fair play to them. They've went on and I think they made the latter stages, certainly into the group stages, and I don't know if they get any further beyond that, but, you know, it was annoying. It was a disappointing conclusion to, you know, you so hope to qualify for Europe for everything that it means in terms of going to follow the team abroad and new places, new experiences potentially. You know, we had a couple of brilliant nights possibly if we had two leg affairs in Northern Ireland. There would certainly have been plenty with that. Went for the kind of the unique opportunity, having seen us play in Israel, and to have be denied all of that and ending up a damp squib, kind of fairly deflating stuff, really.
The month ended with a heavy defeat at Fir Park against Rangers, and then to start October, away fixtures at Kilmarnock and St Mirren were both postponed. Now, when I was writing this review that I'm kind of referring back to, I said that later we were awarded 3-0 victories for both games. We all know how that played out. We've still got to play these games at some point next month, but we started with a bit of a lull and no games at the start of October. Devante Cole arrived back at the football club, having scored 4 times in the previous season, in the first half of the previous season for Stephen Robinson's side. And Aaron Chapman also came in, apparently to provide some competition to Trevor Carson for the number one jersey. And again, we all know how that one played out. Dwayne Hilton left to join Ross County. And to be honest, it really struggled to make the impact that we maybe anticipated following a pretty strong first half to last season. Though we returned in the middle of October and produced another pretty strong home showing. Tony Watt was the star man, a 4-0 victory over Ross County. Devante Cole, in his return game, scores a goal as well. For all the negativity, you can maybe talk a bit positively about this one, Pepe, sorry.
Certainly two games that I wouldn't say they were brilliant, but at least we got the victories. As you say, Tony Watt, for me, has been the biggest surprise for me. I was... At the end of the day, he signed. I think he'd been rumoured at signing it a few times. And I wasn't overly excited when he came. And I think that I was influenced by his rumours about his attitude and stuff you've already alluded to. But I just think that he's worked great, his attitude. Even to an extent, his social media presence is quite refreshing, some of the things that he does and some of the things that he gets involved with. I've taken to him, not just for the stuff off the park, but I think that there's times in the games where he's back at left back, right back, he's all over the pitch. He's almost been given a free role, and he's been great. He's been one of the very few shining lights that's come through this season, and I hope that continues. I'm delighted that we've got him in a longer term kind of contract than what we have with, like, say, Devante Cole, because you've mentioned him as well, and he seems to have improved. He certainly appears better to be playing through the middle. I think that's part of the problem that we have, that playing this front three, that for example, Callum Lang, Chrissy Long are getting put either right or left to supplement predominantly Tony Watt, who was given the central role. Whereas I quite like the old-fashioned two up front. But, yep, the two games were enjoyable. And it was the last bit of football that we've really had to say positive things of up until tomorrow, where we hopefully, or we will, get back on the winning tracks.
And yet again, though, that game was maybe marred by the fact that bang their heads against walls, because Trevor Carson picks up an injury, and that ruled them out till what we expect to be around February time. And again, Stephen Robinson had to go into the transfer market. He brought in former Scotland goalkeeper Jordan Archer in a short-term deal, just for much-needed cover. Aaron Chapman had come off the bench midway through the first half in that game against Ross County, and while he looked pretty accomplished in that game, we would go on to find a bit of a different side to him. The last game of October, and ironically the last game that we actually won, was at Livingston. Callum Lang and Tony Watt on target again in a 2-0 victory. And Stephen Robinson after it said that it was a complete performance. And it certainly stood us in good stead, but we weren't able to make it 3 wins in a row. Celtic came to Fir Park, came away 4-1 winners. And again, Andy, it's maybe one of these ones that you just look back on and think, after going behind, we never really threatened to get back into it. And that was a Celtics team that were smarting from defeats in Europe, maybe a wee bit vulnerable, but we never really gave them much kind of need for concern.
No, it was poor, that one. Even when we did manage to force our way back into it to a certain extent in the second half, within 4 minutes you conceded again. So it's just right off, that one. No more to be said about that.
See, normally I actually mute myself for a wee bit longer when you're answering, but straight back on is fine. I suppose when we look back on the year, there was better times ahead for Declan Gallagher and Stephen O'Donnell, who were both part of the Scotland side that secured qualification for the European Championships in the summer, both playing major roles as Scotland ended that 23-year wait for an appearance at a major competition. A fantastic, positively nerve-shattering as well, but to go on and finally secure the victory in penalties, it's magnificent. And to see two players that were featuring as regularly for Motherwell, as both of these guys were, at the heart of the action was fantastic to see. We returned to domestic football when we lost both Alan Campbell and Barry Maguire prior to the trip to McDermott Park. They'd been part of the Scotland under 21 squad and were forced to self-isolate following a number of positive cases in their squad. They had a trip to Greece 4 or 5 days prior to our trip to St Johnston. The game ended 1-1, and to be fair, I think it was a slightly fortuitous result. The following week, St Johnston were the opposition again at Fir Park in the Betfred Cup, and it was a really, really disappointing afternoon. Maybe I've asked Andy about his feelings on the St Mirren defeat in the Scottish Cup in 2020. For me, this was every bit as bad, if not a bit worse, because you go in front, you look like you're going to assert some sort of control in the game, and then we just kind of folded somewhat. And then with the benefit of hindsight, we now know that St Johnstone face a final against Livingston to claim a domestic trophy. I'm not saying that we would have replicated the run, but fixtures against Dunfermline away, Hibs in a semi-final, you would have thought that we would have had a good chance of progressing in both of these games. And who knows where we could have been. Well, we do know where we would have been if we'd been in the final. So we can look back in that one again with a bit of regret.
A bit of regret, not too much, to be honest, because having watched the League Cup, I don't know how it would have felt, Motherwell playing in a semi-final and not being there.
A lot happier than losing to St Johnston.
Nah, I'm trying to be positive about it. You're the Grim Reaper today. What I'm trying to say is, see, I understand, right, everybody looking at it saying, oh, but Celtic and Rangers get put out. Right, that's fine. But I think I wouldn't want Motherwell to win a cup and for me not to be at Hampden to watch it, and unless it was through other channels than this. I just don't think it would be the same. And if it went in our 20 years that we went without winning a 30 years as it is, without winning a trophy, I don't want it to be during this time. So in hindsight, it didn't really bother me, because I knew that we wouldn't be there to see us lifting it. If that's a positive spin on it that makes me feel better, then so be it.
It's a unique take. I think we would all manage to find a way to enjoy winning a cup, just given the length of time between the last one and the present day. But yeah, I do get what you're saying, and I would imagine it took somewhat of the shine off St Johnston and Livingston fans' weekends, the fact that they weren't there to enjoy both teams achieving the feat of getting to a cup final, which is magnificent for both sides. And I've seen a few detractors from that, but I don't think that...
Did St Mirren not make it?
No, they certainly didn't, Andy.
Oh dear.
Yeah, there was a lot of disappointed faces in my household. None at all. To be fair, considering that they've been playing like Brazil, according to some people I know, in recent weeks, it was a real surprise that Livingston turned them over with these that they did. But a wee reality check for some there. Right, so we've gone to December. I appreciate we're going on and on here. The announcement was made that we'd be getting 6 points for the Kilmarnock and St Mirren games. That was great news. They would later be taken off us. We then played Hibs at Hibs Park. And at the time, we thought we could actually close the gap on Hibs in fourth spot and suddenly be mounting a challenge for Europe. How wrong were we there? Bevis McGabby had what looked to be a perfectly good goal disallowed on the stroke of half-time. And in the second half, Hibs really took control and would eventually go on to win 3-0. There was more home disappointment the week after. St Mirren, after us giving them a wee bit of a hard time there, they came to Fir Park and defeated us 1-0. And that's a staple part of the year as well, Andy, the fact that we really struggled to win at home.
Yep. It's not been great at all. Well, clearly our form's not been great at all, but you're looking for your home record to be where your foundation for where you kind of build your season around, and it's just not been there. Struggling to score more than one goal, even when we are scoring, and just been kind of disappointing. The two games there, certainly you're in them for large spells of the game. You know, Hibs had only kind of scored like the second goal with a couple of minutes left. The St Mirren game, I felt like they'd kind of scored a wee bit against the kind of run of play, but we just didn't have enough about us to get back in, even though we kind of went on to control most of the game thereafter. So certainly disappointing losses, but again, very much in keeping with not taking opportunities whenever they did come to us and being kind of suckered by the opposition.
So as we move towards the conclusion of this, the rest of December really didn't play out as we hoped. The visit to Ibrox ended in a 3-1 defeat, despite the fact that we had taken the lead. We were drawn 0-0 in the game prior to Christmas at home to Aberdeen, then been denied a victory at Tannadice by a late equaliser before a 2-0 home defeat to Kilmarnock brought to an end Stephen Robinson's time at Fir Park. Now, Pepe, when I list these results, they're clearly not good, and it left the team in a pretty precarious position. The fans were slowly turning against the manager, and I think in the heat of sitting there watching games in front of a live stream, there's obviously a great deal of frustration from the supporters that they're not inside the stadium and not able to even have a small influence on the games. I think as well, in these times, there's quite a lot of knee-jerk reactions to matches because fans are able to vent their frustration instantly, whereas maybe they would take a wee bit more time had they been inside the ground. It was a move that I think when it broke, it took a wee bit of reflection. And the one feeling was one a disappointment that hadn't turned around for Stephen Robinson, because there's no doubt when we look back on his time at Fir Park, it was a successful time. It's one that produced some really good players. It's one that in which the club generated some fantastic transfer fees as well. And then we move on, and Graeme Alexander is now in the managerial hot seat. But as for Stephen Robinson, I think that he will be remembered as one of the very best Motherwell managers, right up there with the greats that have been in charge of the football club.
I think that's maybe a wee bit too far, in my opinion. I think he done well. We got to 2 cup finals and finished third. Some of the football that we endured was terrible. I don't think he's one of the greats, comparing them to in my time. I mean, certainly, Tommy McLean is.
I'll rephrase that. In modern times, if I look at my lifetime, I would say that Tommy McLean, albeit I kind of came to the party a wee bit later there. Since then, we've had some good managers, but I think the consistency and the win percentage and the memories that have been spread over the 3 or 4 seasons that Stephen Robinson's been here are up there with anything that I can look back on, perhaps with the exception of the 2007-2008 season under Mark McGee, where we had some spectacular performances, but then it would tail off so badly the following season. I think that Robinson brought some really great times, and for that reason, I would hold him up there. I can't think of anyone better since playing than Robinson.
No, I think he was a decent manager. But the thing is, right, we spoke about a year of football there, and it's probably gave me a wee reflection, and there's not been too many positives come out of that. Now, he did have a good, relatively good season last year. Now, again, I've been positive the last few weeks. But it was going to be a real task for us to finish in third position. Fast forward that, when I was really, really grateful, and maybe not grateful is the right word for it, but I was delighted that he didn't get the Northern Ireland job and he was staying with us, because I did like him. And there's never been once where I've been on this for the amount of time that we've been doing it, where I've said I wanted him to go. But if you look back on what we've spoken about tonight, the last kind of a year, give and take the pandemic, there's not been too many games that I've enjoyed. There's not been too many games that the performance has been up there. The signings have been poor. And I think now, on reflection, it was the right decision and the right time to go. And I've got to commend him for that, because he's obviously recognised that. So, yes, he got us to the two cup finals. He saved us for the relegation. With Mark McGee, the team was only going one way, and that was down. And he worked wonders for the first couple of years. But in saying that, I just think that when you look at, I mean, how many positives have we actually said over this last hour? It's been quite I think that you've just been trying to knock the positivity out, maybe we reflecting over it for the last hour or so.
I think the thing is, if we were here doing like a review of 2019, you would have almost a mirror image. And I think that's been the difference. He's never really had a spell of a kind of consistency beyond maybe 8 or 9 months. And that's the thing, it's definitely all been kind of up and down. You know, you did the high points, as you said, the managing to avoid relegation, rebuilding a team, getting to, you know, the League Cup final. It started to ebb away a wee bit. He kind of mended that, repaired another cup final. The following 3-4 months of his second season, full season in charge, was pretty awful. We then had a bit of calendar year where things were looked really good. Football was good with youngsters breaking through. And then it kind of fell away again over time. Maybe you were getting into February and this year. What he has shown is that he's kind of built, dismantled, rebuilt, dismantled, rebuilt. And there's been varying degrees of success within that. Some of his kind of rebuild jobs have done pretty well. Others this season, not quite so much. And keep in mind as well, he said several players kind of knowing the way that the club operates, that as soon as a decent offer is coming in, that he knows he's going to lose them. You know, as we've seen with the likes of Scott, as we've seen with the likes of Turnbull, even kind of Moult as well, you know, getting back as far as that. So he's kind of done that and he's rebuilt. But I kind of think that, you know, I felt he could have turned it around. I felt he'd the experience there. He certainly had the backing of the board, and I don't know how much input he had in these signings that's come in, but certainly if Lawless, I've seen him being attributed to him. So he was an upgrade. There was obviously moves that he'd others kind of working on, and you know, the fact that Jordan White's so close to getting out the door, as we talked just now, it suggests that, you know, there's a bit like maybe Alex Fisher, that it's not worked out and he's just going to remedy it. So I still have confidence that he could have turned things around. But ultimately, I have to agree with what you said, though. It's like, and what I would have to acknowledge as well is that if he felt that he wasn't in a position to turn it around, whether he'd run out of steam, whether the message was being diluted because he'd said it so often before and it was the time to go, then if that's what he's saying, then it's definitely the right time to go.
Yeah, I think maybe the one thing that you both have kind of pointed out there is he had a knack of getting a result as well when the pressure was stacking up on him, that he just managed to pull one out the bag that perhaps stemmed the tide. Even that Ross County result that we were talking about way back about 4 hours ago, that result, you go 1-0 down, and if it had been this season, I very much imagine we would have went on to lose that game. But instead, we knuckled down and produced a performance that was well above the levels that we had been shown in the previous 7 games, going to win it 4-1. You then go into a game at Tynecastle, where, remember that game was, and watching that Hearts documentary as well, they were absolutely desperate for points at that point in the season. And they still had a relatively good side as well. We went a goal up. Yes, we conceded early in the second half, but we still played the game out pretty well. And I think you'd always settle for a point at Tynecastle. So things were looking up, and he had maybe stopped the rot and then looked like he was turning it around again. There was a real momentum breaker last season, and I don't think that Stephen Robinson ever really recovered from that. Whereas in the previous years, we've been able to recover from a slow start to the season. In truth, only a spell in middle to late October has given us any sort of confidence that we could go on a winning run. And since then, obviously, we've not managed to pick up 3 points since. So there's big challenges ahead. There's big challenges ahead for Graeme Alexander as well, who, while he's picked up 2 decent points in his first 2 games, Saturday was a step back and lost to Aberdeen. So he'll know himself that he needs to get that first win under his belt and then try and garner some sort of momentum as well, because until you start winning games, you're going to be in a relegation battle. And that's very much where we are at just now. And I think going back on 2020, it certainly wasn't without its challenges and everything that went on, and we still don't know what this year is going to hold. But I think that the way that the club and the supporters have tackled the challenges that were faced last year should give us some source of encouragement that we can get out of this situation we are on the pitch, and also the situation that we're in the world, to be back at Fir Park, hopefully by the end of 2021, we'll be back to doing what we love and supporting the club that we love.
Here's hoping. Echo well, that.
Well, Pepe, I'm very sorry for bringing you down. Hopefully tomorrow night's game at Ross County can bring you back up.
I think, as I've said before,
you never reached the lows that you previously did, so you're keeping up with your morale pretty well. I'm impressed.
No, I definitely think this, but when you look back to even at the start of the season at Ross County, compare it to the game that's coming up, we didn't have any luck in that game. The luck's got to change, so we're going on to the next 2 games as a victory. 6 points coming up.
Well, let's hope so. Guys, thank you very much for your time tonight. I've really enjoyed this. Well, I say I've really enjoyed it. It was a depressing subject matter.
Right, cheers. Well, I was going to say that as well. I usually finish off by saying it's a pleasure, but I would be stretching it. A review of Motherwell's 2020, in truth.
Things can only get better.
I wait to watch EastEnders or something, cheer yourself up. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back shortly. Until then, thank you. Goodbye.
Alive on, so you start kicking when the room is spinning and the words aren't sticking. And the radio was all about a runaway model with a face like sin and a heart like a James Joyce novel. Saying sister, sister, how I missed you, let's go wrist to wrist and take the skin off of a blister. If you're a rock star, porn star, superstar, doesn't matter what you are, get yourself a good car, get out of here. Well, put the boys in the better land. You're always talking about the boys in the better land. The boys in the better land. Put the boys in the better land. You're always talking about the boys in the better land. The boys in the better land. Driver's got names to fill two double barrels. He spits out, breathes out, only smokes carols. And he's refreshing the world in mind, body and spirit. Mind, body and spirit. You better hear it and fear it. Ah, oh, that's the spirit. Saying sister, sister, how I missed you, let's go wrist to wrist and take the skin off of a blister. If you're a rock star, porn star, superstar, doesn't matter what you are, get yourself a good car, get out of here. Yeah. Put the boys in the better land. You're always talking about the boys in the better land. The boys in the better land. But the boys in the better land. You're always talking about the boys in the better land. The boys in the better land. Driver's got names to fill two double barrels. He spits out, breathes out, only smokes carols. And he's refreshing the world in mind, body and spirit. Mind, body and spirit. You better hear it and fear it. Ah, that's the spirit. Saying sister, sister, how I missed you, let's go wrist to wrist and take the skin off of a blister. If you're a rock star, porn star, superstar, doesn't matter what you are, get yourself a good car, get out of here. Yeah. Put the boys in the better land. You're always talking about the boys in the better land. The boys in the better land. Put the boys in the better land. You're always talking about those boys in the better land. The boys in a better life.